This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
UN and international aid agencies are working quickly to move refugees and migrants out of harm's way in Libya as rival groups vying for control of the capital, Tripoli, clash for a fifth day. The fighting in a town south of the capital involves the local militia and tribal leaders.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also in Uganda, there are reports that officials have agreed to let lawmaker Robert Kyagulanyi travel to overseas for medical treatment. Analysts see the global trade war limiting Beijing's ability to extend loans for big projects. And the UN says degraded land affects the livelihoods and well-being of some 3 billion people every year. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. We have breaking news now. In Uganda, there are reports that officials have agreed to let lawmaker Robert Kyagulanyi travel overseas for medical treatment. Yesterday, Kyagulanyi, a pop singer known as Bobby Wine, was rearrested at the airport as he tried to leave the country. As a result, protests broke out today in Kampala. We're speaking now with Chawanuka Lawrence Sereko, a political analyst in New York State who closely is monitoring developments right now in Uganda. Hello there, Chawanuka.
Hello, Kim. Good afternoon.
Yes, thank you so much for speaking with us. And what can you tell us right now? What is going on?
Well, the breaking news, according to family members, is that Kyagulanyi is actually leaving the hospital in the suburb of Kampala near Makindye Barracks to head to the airport to travel to the U.S. for medical attention.
Do you know... Go
yes,
ahead.
Please.
You can go ahead. I was just going to ask, do you know where in the U.S. he's going to go?
My understanding is that he's coming to the capital area.
Okay. And what type
that
of...
That is going to depend mainly on the availability of flights, because as you know, that the flight was canceled yesterday, and they are trying to scramble to find any airline that can bring him into the U.S.
What has changed to that they're now allowing him to leave?
It's primarily the pressure from the local people in Uganda who are really expressing their displeasure of the government behavior, but also the international community that is pressurizing the government to do the right thing. The media campaigns where we've been talking to people like a Voice of America who are doing a good job by exposing the character of the regime in Kampala. So the campaign, the media is really doing a good job. You can't leave out also the social media impact. And the government is realizing that they are making a mistake and the pressure is bearing fruit.
While you say the government is realizing this, what information do you have? What is the government actually saying?
Well, the government is taking an excuse saying that they needed to check him out first before they believe that he really needs to travel. But that is a way of escaping the reality, because even to the naked eye of a non-professional person, you could see this person is hurt. He can't stand on his own. He has bruises. So the government has been playing games, and I think it's the pressure that is being put on it that is bearing fruit.
And what is the mood right now in Uganda with this new development?
Well, the new development is not pleasing the people totally. It's a relief, most of the family, that their loved one can come and get medical attention. But as you understand, that it's not only Bobby Wine who is in this situation. There's another member of parliament, Francis Zake, who is still being held by the government. They are not letting him go. We have the women who are badly battered during their detention, who are still needing medical attention. So there is more to it than just my friend Chagulani that needs attention. So, yes, the people are relieved that this one individual is being allowed to travel for medical treatment, but the country needs to, or the world needs to understand that it's more than just one person. This is a systematic failure on the side of the NRM regime.
Thank you. And thank you so much for giving us this latest information. And we will continue to follow developments and bring them to our audience. And that was Chiwanuka Lawrence Sereko speaking with me from New York. Xenophobic attacks have surged in South Africa in the past week, with at least four foreign nationals killed in clashes with angry locals who accuse them of taking scarce jobs. On Friday, a new anti-foreigner political party marched in Johannesburg, demanding that non-South Africans leave the country. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg with reporting from Zahir Qasim.
The 150 or so protesters who marched through downtown Johannesburg on Friday demanded the deportation of all undocumented foreigners in South Africa by the end of the year. Their protests followed a new outburst of deadly xenophobic violence in the Soweto area. Police say 27 people were arrested and that two face murder charges. Friday's march was led by Tembelane Ngubane, the founder of the new party known as the African Basic Movement. He says the party's views on foreign nationals are central to its platform.
We cannot allow foreigners, even legal foreigners, to do small businesses in South Africa. That is for South Africans only. Illegal foreigners cannot do any business. So the Constitution says they must be deported.
Nearby at a nail salon, Malawian national Tasila Banda was hard at work, filing and painting nails. But she took a moment to share her feelings on the protesters and on South Africans in general. Her words indicate that there is a deep gulf between the two communities.
You see, they're saying foreigners, we are stealing their jobs. Well, they can't do what I'm doing. You see, they will say foreigners, they are taking their wives. They can't support their wives. All they do is drinking beer or go and steal. That's it.
Some 2 million foreign nationals live in South Africa, according to the most recent census. Ngubane's group believes that foreign nationals take jobs and bring crime into the country. But researchers have found that these immigrants are often job creators and are not disproportionately responsible for violent crime. Sharona Kambaram, who heads a refugee and migrant rights program for Lawyers for Human Rights, says her group is filing a legal complaint against the party. Her group says the party is spreading hate speech, which is against the law in South Africa. She says these views hurt everyone, not just foreigners.
It is dangerous. It's not only dangerous to foreign nationals, our brothers and sisters coming from our neighboring countries, predominantly Black African brothers and sisters, but it's also dangerous for South Africans and poor communities. And I think that we, you know, law enforcement agencies need to be much more visible. We call on the police to ensure that they take action. This is unlawful.
Both of South Africa's main political parties, the ruling African National Congress and the opposition Democratic Alliance, have condemned the recent violence and say that xenophobia has no place in the Rainbow Nation. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
UN and international aid agencies are working quickly to move refugees and migrants out of harm's way in Libya as rival groups vying for control of the capital, Tripoli, clash for a fifth day. The fighting in a town south of the capital involves a local militia and tribal leaders. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Libyan authorities report 30 people, many of them civilians, have been killed and 96 wounded in several days of fighting. The charity Doctors Without Borders warns the lives of local residents, as well as some 8,000 refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants, are at risk. A spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Paul Dillon, says more than 5,800 people reportedly have been displaced. He says the situation in Tripoli is extremely volatile and dangerous. He says earlier this week, the IOM, with help from Libyan and Malian authorities, authorities was able to safely fly 164 migrants to their homes of origin in Mali. He says there is a waiting list of migrants from Somalia and other African countries who want to go home.
And we're also looking to try and speed up the voluntary humanitarian return part of this. Many of the people of these Somalian caseload were already sort of in the pipeline, and we're looking to find ways to accelerate that process. Obviously, working very closely with UNHCR on these matters.
A joint effort by several UN and international agencies on Tuesday succeeded in evacuating some 300 refugees and migrants held in Ain Zahra Detention Center in Tripoli. The UN Refugee Agency says the detainees were in danger of becoming caught in the hostilities. The UNHCR says those released from detention came mainly from Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somalia, and have been moved to a safer location. Dylan says many Libyan families also have been displaced by the fighting. He says some have even taken shelter from the hostilities in several of the detention centers emptied of their refugee and migrant inmates. He says all agencies are pitching in to provide the many people displaced by the fighting with life-saving assistance of water, food, and medical care. He says other basic aid items, including blankets, mattresses, and hygiene kits, also are being supplied. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Over the past decade, China has extended billions of dollars in loans to African countries, mostly for infrastructure. Next week, leaders of the continent will meet in China to ask for more. But some experts say the global trade war between powerful countries may have an impact on how China uses its money. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Every 3 years, Chinese and African leaders hold a summit to discuss ways China can fund Africa's infrastructure projects and its development aspirations. On the agenda of the next session will be the Belt and Road Initiative, which aims to better connect China with the African continent. But with China engaged in a trade disagreement with the US, Cobus van Staden, senior researcher on Africa-China relations at the South African Institute of International Affairs, says the Chinese government may be in a less giving mood this time around. Staden said it is an open question how much China can expand its current engagement in Africa. He said the Chinese economy is facing a head wound, particularly because of the global trade war. So China is not at the same place economically that it was a few years ago. At the 2015 gathering in South Africa, China pledged to loan Africa $60 billion to build its economies. Chinese companies are currently building railway lines in Kenya, Nigeria, and Angola, as well as roads and housing projects in South Africa. However, some Africans are worried their governments have overborrowed and left their countries with huge debt that will hurt economic growth. The head of the Africa Policy Institute, Peter Kagwanja, says the loans need to be directed at the projects that have high economic returns.
But of course, the question is, how do African countries deal with that particular debt? And China's answer, which Africans seem to be agreeing with, is that we need investment in activities that are going to produce maximumly to get the investment pay for themselves.
China is accused by Western powers of supporting and funding undemocratic states and countries that do not have respect for human rights. As China's interests expand, Kagwanja says it cannot ignore the security and political threats in the region.
That question is critical and was really thrust to the fore by the kind of uncertainty that surrounded Kenya's political elections last year at a time when China was celebrating 1 year of the SGR railway in the country. And that uncertainty raised the question of what can China do to secure the political stability of African countries? What kind of governance system Africa need to adopt in order to secure on a long-term basis, not only investment, but long-term planning, for socioeconomic transformation?
The two-day forum in Beijing ends on Tuesday. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The United Nations says degraded land affects the livelihoods and well-being of some 3 billion people every year, especially in developing countries. But there are many groups trying to reverse that trend. Ruben Chama reports from Nairobi.
African community groups told at least 1,000 delegates from around the world about their efforts to restore forests and other local landscapes. In Kenya, leaders from a community-based organization along the coast shared success stories about how locals jealously safeguarded some 615 hectares of thick mangrove forest from human destruction. The efforts by the Mikoko Pamoja community group demonstrates the importance of conserving mangroves to fight climate change and using the proceeds to improve people's lives. Project coordinator Josephat Mwamba Mtwana explains.
It is a purely community-led initiative, which is we do mangrove conservation and restoration through a scheme called carbon crediting scheme. So we earn from carbon trading through mangrove conservation and restoration, which where now the finance is used for development of the community as well as funding mangrove restoration and conservation programs. Like any other forests, mangroves are very, very important. They are important for firewood, they're important for building and construction, you know, the extractive poles, they're important to fisheries, shoreline protection. So their degradation rate is very, very alarming.
Teresa Gitonga is the country director of the International Tree Foundation, a non-governmental organization that works with communities in Africa to conserve and restore tree cover and forests.
What is very interesting is that every community is unique and their interests, their motivations are different. Each of those areas have indigenous trees. And there are community members who are very good at identifying those indigenous trees that are good in those places. So the issue is balancing between conservation and the tangible benefits, livelihood benefits. Because the communities want to know, what am I getting? How is this improving my livelihoods?
Gitonga says our organization aims to plant 20 million trees in Kenya over the next 6 years.
The reason why we are doing this planting 20 million trees campaign, which we expect to finish by 2024, is that we want to celebrate our centenary, 100 years since International Tree Foundation was founded. The organization was initially started in Kenya in 1924. That time, there's one man called Richard Becker who saw the importance of safeguarding our natural diversity and also safeguarding our trees.
Initiatives such as mangrove restoration are demonstrating the potential for greater agricultural yields, ecosystem services, and climate protection. Speakers at the Nairobi Forum said the global landscapes community plans to restore more than 2 billion hectares of degraded land worldwide, a footprint larger than South America. For progress to take place, they said, the private and public sectors must invest $350 billion annually. Maya Adams, a youth delegate from Uganda, says now is the time to convert commitments to restore hundreds of millions of hectares of land into action by involving communities, women and youths.
I think it was a really good and very encouraging experience because we all faced different challenges. It was a time for us to sit down, reflect on them, and it was also a chance for us to empower each other. It's a chance for people like women to have a voice, especially in many African countries where women are not allowed to have land. And once women have a chance to kind of like have a say in what's going to happen, land restoration is successful.
UN experts say Africa loses some 2.8 million hectares of forest every year due to deforestation and land degradation. The meeting, dubbed the Global Landscapes Forum, is the world's largest science-led platform on sustainable land use. It came at a pivotal moment in the wake of raging wildfires, droughts, and the increasing number of migrants being driven from their homes by land degradation, food insecurity, and conflict. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Last week, Egyptian security forces arrested three leading opposition figures. They include a former assistant foreign minister who had called for a referendum on President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Egyptian political parties see the latest arrest of opponents as a pattern that has been taking place for the past year or more. Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat is the president of the Reform and Development Party. He is calling on President Sisi to discuss with parties the future of a shrinking political life in Egypt. He explained to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed al-Shanawi why he supports such a dialogue.
Simply because what we have been all witnessing during the last year or two, things happening in Egypt which does not really confirm what even the president himself have been promoting, that he is open, that he is willing to have this political space open, that people can practice their rights. So I think it's time that he should initiate this by calling all the political party leaders or even civil society leaders, intellectuals, to meet and to have a dialogue what or how we would like to see Egypt on the coming, let's say, years. Would we like to see our country, you know, as we all wish to see?
Did you get any response, or was your call ignored, as was the case for a similar call you initiated in February of this year?
What I see, and maybe others have been witnessing, that although maybe the president have been taking decisions when it comes to economic reforms, severe decisions which reflect in people's life, and maybe he have been calling for religion reforms, but we haven't seen anything related to political reforms and opening up political space for everyone to express his opinion or freedom of speech or association or assembly. So we are calling him to do so because we are all after seeing Egypt in a situation where there is chance for everyone to be part of decisions taking related to their life, future. So that's why I keep asking him to do so, because, I mean, he's the only one who could call for this, or the only one who could make this a reality.
Mr. Sadat, you have also warned against state security apparatus involvement in trying to re-engineer the political life in Egypt. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Honestly, Yanni, what we have seen lately, that the, let's say, the security apparatus have been very much involved in the political life, also in the, let's say, structuring of the existing parliament. This has to stop, and they have to give the chance to political parties to be engaged and to be operating on the grassroots, on the ground, because Egyptians, they don't feel political parties anymore. They feel that political parties are not really engaged, are weak. So we need them to raise their hands from not only the political parties, but syndicates, trade unions, student unions. They should somehow realize that things have changed, that the old Egypt is not as the new Egypt, which we all have hoped to see after the revolutions of 2011.
That was Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat, president of Reform and Development Party. He explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed al-Shanawi why he is calling for a dialogue with the Egyptian president. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and thanks for choosing the VOA.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.